EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we thought?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. Thank you for stopping by. Tonight's guest is Jeff from Detroit, with 3 encounters he has had over the years, all quite different, but as you are here, quite possibly all connected. And if you or someone you know has had an encounter that you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. But before we meet our guest, I want to say hello to one of our youngest listeners, Angelo, age 9, from Philadelphia. Great to have you as a listener, buddy. Remember, keep watching the skies. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find the link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Show, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on, man. You were joining us today from Detroit.
That's right, Detroit, Michigan.
I know we got a lot of listeners out that way. Now, Jeff, you joined us today with 3 experiences.
I did, yes. 3 experiences that I had growing up in, or 2 experiences I had growing up in. One I had relatively recently that kind of strung them all together, and I didn't even realize that was a thing. And I either way, the first experience was a close encounter with a black triangle that was just above my rooftop. I was witnessed it with my mother. And the second experience was like this entity encounter while on some sort of makeshift ghost hunt type of thing. And the third being an ayahuasca ceremony that kind of sent me back in time and had me speaking to some sort of strange entity and kind of tied it all together.
This sounds interesting. Would you like to start with the first one when you were 12 years old, please, Jeff?
Yeah, actually, I think I typed that to you wrong. I apologize. The year was 96. And I know I got to zero in the year, the time of day, and everything because I was a huge video game nerd then. My brother brought home Ultima Online the year after. So it was 1 year later after it came out. So it was actually 1996. And it was the time of day was around 4 p.m. roughly, because we fed the horses almost every single day at the same time. I mean, it was on repeat for 18 years. And we got home. It was a summer day. orange sky. We walked back to feed the horses, and they were acting pretty crazy. And that usually meant that the neighbors behind us back in the woods were being pretty rowdy. They loved to party. And when they did, the horses went nuts and constantly injured themselves. So we come down, we get them into the stall. That was nothing out of the ordinary at all. But when we turned back to go to the house, we picked up our stuff by the hay barn. And the second we started walking back to the back door, which is about 50 yards altogether, there was a faint wind that kind of, it wasn't a loud wind, but it definitely had something to do with muffling out the noise around us, because all we heard was the wind. And as soon as we noticed the wind, my mother exclaimed, "Holy shit!" and took off running towards the back of the house. Now, she probably in the panic forgot that she had her son right beside her, but I was clinched and ducking, thinking that I was about to get run over by a horse, because honestly, that wouldn't be the first time that a horse ran through that path right there, and my mother screamed, "Get out of the way," or something. But I ducked, and then when I looked at her and saw her looking up and running, I looked up, and there above our rooftop, the biggest black, gunmetal black triangle with three soft lights. At the time, I used to describe the lights as being like lights that just kind of ended. They would come down towards the ground, but they didn't actually touch the ground. They just kind of ended. And now, as a sailor, I've got these huge fog LEDs all over my boat. And so I'm just assuming they were kind of like an LED type of light. I don't know. That's just what they look like to me. The triangle was still. And my mother turned from the back of the house screaming at the top of her lungs in a panic to get over here now. And so I started running. I was just running, looking up. I can remember breakneck 90 degrees looking at this thing, and it was just absolutely massive. It covered from our neighbor's house all the way down over our little pond swamp that we had on the side of our yard down to a dead end road. And when we measured that was like 180 yards, almost 200 yards altogether when encompassing the neighbor's house. And it just absolutely stayed there, not moving, not making any sound really at all, except we could hear that light wind. The trees were whipping around, and it slowly started drifting sideways until the point where we could see kind of like the front and right side, the starboard side. And the sun was beaming off it. We could see it was like a gunmetal black. It was I didn't see like a cockpit or anything. I just saw the sharp, sharp edges. It was a whole equilateral triangle. It was, I will say that we both kind of remarked that it looked more like an isosceles triangle from the side, but when we were right underneath it, when it was right over our heads, when it was scaring the ever living shit out of us, it looked just like a equilateral triangle. And once we got to the house, we ran inside, we're looking out the window, we're watching this thing slowly drift now over the road. It picks up speed just a touch, not very much, but it starts drifting at a few knots over the road towards the nursing home, where we see it. We see the lights kind of go behind the trees right in front of us to the nursing home. Now, this is not three lights in the sky. This is not a formation in the shape of a triangle on a night sky. This was a daytime sighting. It was, airborne, you jump at, sub 1,500 feet, and this thing was way underneath that. So I always just say at most it was like 800, 900 feet off the ground. But it was, quite literally, this thing was so low that we could see detail on it. And one of the things that we noticed was the tail on it, the aft part, was like it wasn't the same color. It wasn't glowing or anything, but it was like it almost looked like a bare metal type of look. And it came at a point, like it was its own 90 degrees. But other than that, the craft had the same type of flatness that you would see in like a modern stealth aircraft. But this was so large, it was hovering, it barely moved. Everyone knows how an airplane works. So when you look at an airplane, the first thing you think is normal. There's nothing out of the blue here. When you look up at something that you can't understand how it's even there in the first place, you just stay baffled and you're just trying to make sense of it. But the way it moved was absolutely impressive, because it moved silently and it moved just right along. Kind of like it was on an air cart. I don't know how to explain it. It was just wonderful. And my mother inside the house, she ran to get the phone and her camera. Couldn't find her camera. Calls my stepfather, who instantly dismissed it. He was like, "Yeah, right. You kidding me? You saw an airplane. Big deal." And we talked about it for a while that day. And my mother just kept saying over and over again, "It had to have been a stealth bomber. It had to have been a stealth bomber." I get a book out of the library the next day. I show her, "That's not a stealth bomber. It's clearly not a stealth bomber. We were using early internet showing her what they look like. Nothing, no stealth aircraft the Air Force had or anyone had, as far as I could tell, had anything like this. And I certainly don't think they had something that could hover silently. And it's just been that event has been, it's rather mundane because it just rather went over our heads. And there's my mother and I's story kind of conflicts as of late, but I just assumed it was because of her age, but that's kind of insulting. But I think that she was trying to spare me some more scary truth, because just recently I remember talking to her about 6 months ago about it, and she said she just kept saying over and over, I'm just so glad it went away because it blocked out the entire light and the whole yard went black, and that, and I just assumed it was crashing. So, you know, she kind of had the same impression of the event than I did, but she was able to just start running right away. I don't know, maybe it was because she was used to being around horses or something and she's fast like that, but I don't know. But she certainly reacted in panic, and I can't think of a single time I've ever seen an airplane of any type, even a stealth one at an air show, that has caused a grown person to scream and run at full speed to get inside. So, yeah, that was the first event. Rather mundane, not too great, but it was just something still to this day that I think about, and I think, why haven't I seen an aircraft come out? The Air Force or Navy or someone has that is just like this. Was it a test craft? I don't know. Why would they be flying it over a lady and a child's head in the middle of Massachusetts like this? You know, it led to a lot of questions that never got answered. And as a child, I would call Otis Air Force Base, which was 50 miles away in East Falmouth, and I would call them and ask them constantly, do you have a stealth aircraft there? You know, the kid, you know, quit. What do you, you know, that was like, it was like I was speaking to some, you know, I don't know, some low ranking desk person. And it was to the point where they would just laugh at me calling so many times because they just thought it was so absurd. But yeah, that was the first event. That was the Black Triangle in Taunton, Massachusetts.
Good stuff. And of course, you've looked at it recently and you've not seen anything that resembles it now.
And not even close. I mean, there are constant, because of these three events, I've become absolutely addicted to reading anything I can about it. And other than hearing kind of the same story over and over again, I haven't seen anything legitimate from any, I mean, I have seen test craft from like Skunk Works and from a few other big boys out there, but I have never seen anything this size. And it's certainly, there are tons of theories out there about the Aurora or whatever it's called. I just don't see that as being real, and why they would be flying it over people's houses like that. And, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. I've never seen anything like that at all ever again. And apparently I'm not the only one that wishes they had. I can't recall the title of the gentleman in the Navy that wrote the patent office claiming that their Navy patents were real and they were legitimate and we have one in operation. I have no idea how loud that motor is they're working on that doesn't have any moving parts. And I'm not a scientist, but I would think, I would just assume that if they had something so fully operational back then, we would have at least seen something about it. I mean, that is an assumption. I don't know if that's true, but it doesn't make any sense that they would have this and then never use it. I don't know. I don't know.
It's like the Blackbird. It was going for 20, 30 years, even before people were really aware of it.
If that's the case, then I would say they did one hell of a job, and maybe it's just trial and error with secrecy, but they did one hell of a job keeping that thing under wraps. But again, I just don't. I mean, I was in the military, and I can't imagine, even though that was all those years ago, accountability is a huge thing. I cannot imagine a military operation that would have a person fly an aircraft and hover it over a couple people in Massachusetts, you know what I mean, and just sit there like nothing. And I don't know. It seems a little dangerous, seems foolish, and if that was a real operation, they were really with an American aircraft, or it just seems nuts. It seems ridiculous.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
To your second experience, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, my second experience, similar in one way to the first, is that I've never witnessed anything by myself. You know, everything has been with a group of people or someone else. I mean, even though I'm pretty hypervigilant, I've never been able to be the first one to ever see anything in the sky or anything. But in high school, there was like a pastime that people would go to this place called Paul Dever in my town. It was a former military post back in World War II, and then a school for the mentally disabled. And it had all types of spooky buildings and steam tunnels under it. And kind of we would go there in the day to do whatever, paintball, ride bikes, do whatever. But at night we would kind of go looking, you know, exploring, because it was wild. You know, as they left, it was pretty much abandoned. They had endless medical, educational, and kind of like stuff to subdue the people that were there. So it was a pretty spooky place. But anyways, my uncles used to tell me all the time about an MP station that they had found. They found a manhole cover in the woods, and they went down the manhole cover, and it led to this underground this base with doors that led right up the side of a hill and everything. And he showed me pictures of it, and I was like, holy cow, it's real. You know, they found this underground thing, and he used to tell me there was still stuff down there. There was Jeeps, and there was all types of stuff from World War II, and I thought that would be one of the coolest things ever. So I'm going around school bragging to my friends that we used to go in there anyways, that my uncle told me about this place, and I was going to go find a way in there. And since they bulldozed over all the manhole covers years ago, the only way to possibly find a way in there, rather, was to go through the steam tunnels under Paul Dever. And that's what I did. I went around with some friends looking under the steam tunnels, and we found this bricked up wall that was facing the direction of Miles Standish Industrial Park. And we thought, hell yeah, it's facing west. All we got to do is bash a hole in this brick wall. These bricks have been here since World War II. Bash a hole in this wall and we'll go right through. And so I did it. I bashed a hole in the wall. The tunnel had been bricked up from the other side as well, just a few feet in. So after spending a few hours down there, silently trying to stay as silent as possible, whenever security came around, they hit this hole in the wall that I would finally get through. Instead, I found this other wall, and it was terrible. I spent all these hours doing nothing. So the next day at school, I'm telling my friends, and I say, hey, you know, I found the way to get in there. It's definitely the way. Why would they brick up this wall two different ways unless they, you know, they didn't want kids back there or anything? And there was so many there was miles of steam tunnels and empty buildings, and this is the only steam tunnel that was bricked up. So it seemed to me to be the likely place. All these guys from my school got together, and we go down there, and we're going to go break down that wall and find this MP fort. And since these guys had been in Paul Dever before, it wasn't like I was explaining anything. They loved to go in and explore through there. So we went through, and the usual way of getting in Paul Dever as a high schooler was to drive at full speed past the security guard station at the very entrance of the compound, and then have the 80-year-old man try to chase you to kick you out of there. But there was just no way. But this night, it wasn't an 80-year-old man. It was a much younger man who was in his car, and he was waiting for anyone to try this maneuver. So we didn't do that. We went around to the back of the compound. This place is huge. I would say upwards of 1,500 acres or something. It's pretty large. We snuck in the back through the woods. It was pouring raining. We get our cars parked. We walk through the woods, skip through a couple fields, and as we get to the building that we needed to get to, we see the security guard coming, so we had to wait a few more minutes to get by. He took about 15 minutes to get all the way around the buildings in that area and then leave, and we watched the taillights drive away. And as we all stood up to run across the street in the little open field to get into this building, we hear three loud bangs that were extremely loud, but it was windy. So we kind of, it was a split. We were like, that was the wind? I don't know. Was that the car backfiring off over there? We don't even know what it was. It was extremely loud. It sounded like metal on metal. But we were looking at the building at night it was raining. It was cloudy, but we could see it. And we didn't see any doors or windows opening. So we just assumed that it was the wind and it was somewhere else in the building. We didn't know. But we headed up, and we headed for the sliding garage door that was kind of stuck three quarters of the way down. And about eight of us were there that night. And we all slid under the door. immediately when we get in the building, the staircase leading to the steam tunnels is on the right. You go down that staircase, you can go left. It goes down about a quarter mile, and that leads to the bricked up wall that we needed to get through. If you go right, it leads way back into Paul Dever towards the bigger buildings and the offices and whatnot and many other steam tunnels. Before we went down in that tunnel, my friend Eddie said loud and clear, probably because he wanted, if anyone was in the building, he wanted them to hear us. He said loud and clear, if I'm not going down in these tunnels until we clear this whole building. And if anyone's in here, you better get out now. He was afraid that we'd be trapped in there by some psychopath because there were homeless people in there and drug addicts and crazy people. And anyone looking for refuge away from the police had a spot hidden away in the grounds of Paul Dever. It was just too big to police. Well, we got to the stairs of the steam tunnels, most of us, and Eddie was standing by the other stairs that led upstairs. He asked us to come up there and check it real quick. And right as he said that, we heard footsteps above us, like loud footsteps. And they weren't like a confusing bang that we could confuse with footsteps. It was quite loud. We had 2 million candle flashlights, and we put them right up to the ceiling of the building we were in. And I forgot to mention this, but the building was a bit deceiving. From the side we were looking at, it kind of looked like a relatively small building with a small front, maybe a third floor. But from inside, it was actually built into the side of a hill. So it was almost like 100 yards inside an open warehouse. And we followed this sound of someone running on the third floor all the way down to the other end of the building. And it was fast. It was Michael Johnson fast. And we were freaked out, but we pretty much just assumed that we just scared someone out from over us down the other end of the building. So when we looked back to where the noise started, we noticed that there was like a cutout in the ceiling that led to the third floor. That cutout had railings around it. It almost looked like what like a supervisor would be looking down at his employees, I assumed. The place had a lot of like conveyor belt systems on the outside, so it must have been some sort of mail room or delivery place or something. I'm not sure. But we were looking at the cutout, and we just assumed someone must have been up there. So we instantly all got together and ran towards that staircase leading upstairs, trying to stay in a close group. We didn't want to be separated. And we got 2 big 1 million candle flashlights, and we get up to the third floor. And bam, there's nothing up there. It's a tiny little office room. There's a bird flapping around that makes us all almost fall over because it's running. It's a dove. It's almost hitting us. And we were looking at this I think it's called a dimwaiter, dimwaiter. we're looking at this thing thinking, did someone just somehow go down this 60, 70 year old dimwaiter, this elevator thing, and make it out of here? And it was you couldn't even move it. It was so rusted. So we were completely confused of what just happened. We just had heard someone on the floor above us running all the way from above us all the way to the other end of the building. We got out of that room quick and went right back down into the huge open warehouse room beneath. As we're kind of like we're pretty hard-headed kids. We weren't going to be scared by a homeless person. We came in numbers for a reason. And plus we had girls with us, and we weren't trying to look like wusses. So we were like, okay, we're just, you know, forget that. Nothing's there. Let's go down to the steam tunnel and get it done. We had sledgehammers in our hands and stuff. We had tools. We were ready to go. And as we're walking towards across the, it's only about 40, I don't know how, about 40 feet or so from one staircase to the other, the one that leads down to the tunnels. As we're about halfway, we hear the loud, three loud bangs again. This time it's so loud that everyone in the group yells, oh, you know, like, whoa. And instantly my friend Chris and I, who was holding the other flashlight, turn our flashlights towards the noise. At the far end of the building, there were two doors, one being a regular door that looked like it led to a staircase, a small staircase, and the other one being a giant garage sliding door, up and down door, with a large window that ran across from one side of the door to the other. We heard that bang. The girls screamed once. Everyone yelled one time or gasped one time loudly, and everyone kind of jumped. And we had the flashlights directly on the door. And this is where I get so, it's so ridiculous when I describe it. Even in my head today, I can never get over the idea of what we saw, because in that window was what I could only call a mutant human thing. I don't know. We see this thing. It's slamming on the door with its forearms. They look like forearms to me. And it slammed on the door with its forearms, and its head was shaking. It was, to me, it looked like it had an elongated head, and its eyes were not in the front. Its eyes were like kind of on the side, and it was ghostly white. It was like a ghost white, and we saw it. It took like a good, with the noise, the banging noise had us so shook that we were staring like we weren't breaking eye contact. We were on this door watching that whatever this was banging through in the window. We weren't breaking contact at all. We were so fixated on it that there was nothing. that was going to stop us from looking away. It banged a couple more times. And then I heard my friend mumble, "What is that?" And out of nowhere, Kaylee, one of the girls we were with, screamed so loud. She screamed so loud, she almost blew out her ears. It sounded like a freaking Mad Deuce machine gun going off. She caught sight of it later than everyone. Everyone there was already going, "What?" You know, like the reaction was absolute shock. And she, I don't think she had seen it right away because she screamed so loud after we had all were watching this thing and listening to this thing. And that's when it was like the small group panic kicked in, and every single person that we were with piled out of there as fast as possible. As we were running through the ground, so we slid under the door to get out. It's pouring raining. We're soaking wet. As we're running through the thing, we're running to get our cars. We all decided that we're going to meet down the street at a grocery store that wasn't too far away on Bay Road. And we met there, and in all three separate cars, we all sat in the cars that we came in, and we all drew exactly what we saw. We, you know, at least we were smart enough to do that. And every single person had roughly the exact same thing. It looked like two arms, and it sounds ridiculous. It sounds so ridiculous saying it, but it literally looked like a mix between a human and a horse with two white arms smashing on the door in front of us. And it stayed with us forever. Like, we've never, we can go years without talking about it, but whenever we discuss anything, it's that topic. If I talk to those people. But later that week, it was actually the next day, we're telling everyone in school what had happened. Okay. And everyone at school from that same group of friends was like, "Then we got to go back." So we go back in a larger posse. We've got guys with every weapon you can think of that was pretty much illegal for a kid to have in that day and age, and some that probably weren't. And we go back, and the first thing we do is we go right into that building. We go straight to that door. And the first thing that we notice is there is nothing behind that door, that window. That door stood 30 something feet off the ground, and it used to have a delivery ramp that led to it. Behind that door was a piece of steel bolted in completely all the way around. There was maybe an inch of space between the window and the metal wall. The door to the left of that garage door that we assumed the person must have ran down or something and got behind was just a broken staircase that led. No, there was a 35 foot drop. There was nothing. If you ran out that door, you would have fallen 35 feet. Just like the garage door, except it was impossible to even open. It was like the garage door itself was bolted. To this day, we don't know what we saw. To this day, if I think about it, I have two thoughts in my head. Like I said, I think how crazy of a thing that I saw. I cannot believe what I saw. And the other side of me says, there's no way you saw that. There's just no way. That defies not, I'm like, I hate that expression, but it defies everything logical. It's impossible. We went there and checked the next day. There was no space for a thing back there to see it. But we were there long enough staring at it that we all got a really good look. The noise scared us half to death, the noise of it banging on the wall. So, and we had these two flashlights, and you could only see where the flashlights really were kind of in the area. But where we were was pitch black. So we were staying close together. We didn't move. This thing was shaking its head. And everyone agreed on this, which is the most absurd part of it. It was shaking its head like it was saying no, like really fast. Everyone says, "Did you notice how it was shaking its head?" And everyone was just like, "Yeah, I thought it was just part of it slamming the door. I thought it was that was just something." But then and then you know, Eddie would chime in or something, or Chris would chime in. Why were the arms so white like that? Like they were so white that it was like the most cliche. I don't even want to say it, but if there was such a thing as a ghost with a white ghost, that's what it kind of appeared like, other than the features. I don't know. It was absolutely wild. We talk about it once in a while, but it's not something that we've ever got answers for. In fact, we went back that next day with a posse of people, and it was only got more confusing. We were so baffled because first off, we looked like idiots. We brought all these people back here to talk about this door that this freaking monster was living behind. And we get there, and of course the door can't even be open, and there's a thing behind it. You can't, the noise upstairs wasn't a third floor that was the same size as the entire building. It was a third floor that was tiny little office. So whatever it was on the roof, I guess. I don't know, or went out a window fast and climbed 10, 15 feet to a roof. And then ran down. I don't even know. Even if it did, it would have ran at speeds that were unlike, you know, anything I've heard. It was just absolutely wild, and we never forget about that night. And it was something that drives me crazy that we have no answers for. And that's that story.
Could you describe it again?
This is a jumbled memory, of course, from all those years ago. But the first thing that we all described when we got in our drawings, and I wish we still had these, were a long head. It sounds so absurd, but we never saw a body. We just saw two arms in this giant head. And it was to me, oh my God, to me, it looked something like it really did look something like a horse, like a human, the bottom part of the face to me looked kind of like a man's face. But the rest of the head was way longer and the eyes were way jutted out on the side. Like, that's something I never, to this day, I just still think of, like, when I look at a horse, I think, God dang, are there, sounds absurd, but are there alien mutant horses? I don't even know what to say about it. It's so absurd. But to this day, I can never get that thought out of my head. It's like a freakish horse-headed, shaken, head-banging thing. I don't even know. But its head moved incredibly fast. I want to specify that again. The bangs were just like I said, bang, bang, bang. We all looked. We're all like looking and going, what is that? Like, that was, you know, and then bang, bang again. And then we really had the flashlights right on the door. So we got such a good look at whatever the hell that thing was, because the second Kaylee screamed, I could tell that she had just noticed what we were all looking at, because I think she was looking everywhere trying to figure out what the hell that noise was, where the bang came from. And she was looking at the door behind us, making sure that we could run out. And she, I swear she saw that last, and she just screamed at the top of her lungs. And it was that's justified, because honestly, if I wasn't among a bunch of girls and I wasn't in high school and among my friends, I probably would have done a hell of a lot more than scream, because it was that frightening. And the only way I can even talk about it with any type of bravado was because I was with a group of people and I was able to stand my ground and didn't run away until Kaylee screamed, of course. Then we ran as fast as possible.
And so, again, so many of your friends saw this. Maybe before this episode goes live, maybe try and do us a little sketch just to get an idea.
Oh, I can absolutely reach out to them. I just spoke to them about this just the other day, thinking it'd be great to have them talk about it. I mean, of course, they all come from different backgrounds, but they all agree the same thing. I'll never forget that night. What the hell was that thing? Why was it so white? Its head was huge. You know, that's just like, why was it shaking like that? These are all the things that you hear over and over again whenever we talk about it.
It's an unusual one, all right? I mean, is the site still there, or has it all been knocked down now?
Actually, I believe the majority of it has been knocked down and made into the rest of the industrial park, which I think was always the goal. The industrial park was kind of slowly creeping over a little, you know, towards the grounds. Kind of every year you'd see new buildings over there. And I haven't been back to Taunton in a few years, but my brother that lives there said that some of the buildings were lit on fire. Kids were going there and setting fire, so they just started knocking buildings down, which was unfortunate. But doesn't change all the memories that we have there at all.
Yeah, it'd certainly be interesting to know if there was any background to that site further back in the past, maybe.
Well, I know the history of Paul Dever fairly well because my family worked there. They worked there all the way back when it was an internment camp. My grandfather drove, he was like I don't even know what you call them. They were like voluntary military police for in World War II for internment camps, where like if there was a medical reason you couldn't serve, you would go serve on this post as like a guard. And he worked there. That's where he met my grandmother. She worked at the PX. And I used to hear all types of stories growing up. Apparently, if your family had a good enough lawyer, you wouldn't find yourself at Taunton State Hospital with the likes of Lizzie Borden. Obviously not the same time frame, but if your family had a good enough lawyer or could pay for a good enough defense, you would end up somewhere like a school, mentally handicapped school like Paul Dever. And we have proof of that in my family, because the criminally insane, I have an aunt that's disabled forever because she caught some maniac, you know, attacking another student there. So she tried to intervene and the guy almost killed her. And it just turned out, we found out that way, that it was just because that if you had a good enough defense, your family got you in there instead of Taunton State Hospital. So it was, you heard all types of really, really terrible stories from down in the steam tunnels. When my uncle was a kid, they found the body of this guy, you know, all types of stuff like that. You can imagine if your hometown has two mental hospitals in it, you know, one of which housed Lizzie Borden back in the day. There is the what is that poster? I want to believe from X-Files. That's what it's like for me. I'd really love to believe. And I feel like when you grow up in a place like that, so close to the Hockomock Swamp, where all these people have these facts to establish that the stuff is real and it happens there. And honestly, I hate to say it, I was kind of a naysayer for years until this happened. And like I said, I am grateful that I have never witnessed anything on my own, really. I've always been accompanied by multiple people, or at least by, like, my mother with the first event. I've always had people that saw it as well, because I wouldn't believe me, you know. And there's a lot of people like that where I'm from that have a lot of stories like that that really started to make me think, oh, gosh, maybe I should have started believing them all those years, because that's absolutely wild.
It's usually the case, yeah.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Of course, the third event. I want to be clear too that I don't recommend anyone go try this unless they talk to doctors and whatever else. But from my time in service, you know, I do carry around some symptoms of PTSD, and I have some direct TBI that had happened to me during my time of service. So I started hearing and reading all these anecdotal reports and studies on ayahuasca treatments and what it can do for PTSD and things like that. And so for years I heard about this and never thought I'd ever try it. I would hear about, like, on Joe Rogan or something, or somewhere I'd hear about it. And when I finally got an appointment established, you begin this is in South America. You begin like a ceremony in which you basically, I don't want to give any secrets away, but just sit there and tell yourself, like, if you're an addict, you sit there and tell yourself, help me with my addiction. I will be addiction free. If you're like a person that's angry, you know, you can go down the list. And that's what kind of they have you do for like a week straight. And you really are kind of worked up because they make it seem like you're about to go through something that you're never going to be able to control. And for all you know, you're going to jump out of the window or something. And that's exactly what I felt, because I'm not a drug user. I don't know anything about this type of thing other than what I'm learning on YouTube, which seemingly is the same thing that happens to everyone. So I'm down in South America and I'm doing an ayahuasca ceremony. I spent a week during this meditation mantra thing. And because I have PTSD symptoms, one of the things I'm saying in my head over and over again is, you know, help me with, you know, like, you know, any type of anger and anxiety or dealing with a situation that is out of my control. You know, in the military, there is no passive aggression. There's just aggression. So when you become a civilian as an infantryman, it's kind of one of the hardest things to translate back to normal. So I'm saying this over and over again as I begin to ingest this substance. Now, I'm being told, like I said, for a week straight that I'm going to be seeing all types of goofy patterns and I'm going to be flying through a picture puzzle window, blah, blah, blah. This is what everyone's saying. And they're saying with such certainty that I'm absolutely convinced that this is what's going to happen to me. And as this medicine starts to take effect, the first thing that I noticed was that if I had my eyes open, nothing was happening. And the second I closed my eyes, I could still see the room the same exact way I was before, but it just started like dematerializing into what I can only assume or describe as like the finest dust ever. And it just kind of goes away. And in the room I'm in, I'm suddenly in some sort of cloud chamber. Okay. And in this cloud chamber thing I'm in, I start seeing these bubbles. And they look like bubbles. They look like soap bubbles from where I'm at. And I am frozen solid, because when you're seeing this and you're not using your imagination, you are scared shitless. I don't know how anyone else felt it. I've been told that other people were happy the whole time. I was absolutely terrified when it first started happening, because it was beyond you're not in control of your own thoughts whatsoever. So I'm in this kind of cloud chamber room. It's a dark room. It's got a long, like, high storm cell cloud type of clouds you see like in Florida when they just go so high up in the atmosphere that it's insane. I'm standing there rather, and I'm seeing these bubbles come out of the bottom of this cloud base, and they're flying close to me, and I'm still repeating this mantra because I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm just waiting for some magical cure, like they've been saying in all these research papers. And I'm saying this mantra over and over and over again. I notice these bubbles are getting closer and closer to me, and they're kind of coming in twos and threes and twos, and they're getting close to me, and I'm starting to notice, and I'm like, I'm still saying this mantra over and over, but I'm starting to notice this faces in these bubbles. Faces of all different types of goofy-looking creatures, creatures that don't look humanoid at all, features that it was just all types of stuff. I think I even saw what looked like to me as like a beaver person. Like I was just seeing crazy things. And these bubbles were flying by. And as I'm saying this mantra over and over again, I'm noticing that these things are making all these faces at me. They're making like this face at me like I'm embarrassing myself. So I shut up. I stopped saying the mantra right away. I was like, what? Okay, maybe I should just stop talking because I seemingly am not doing anything but embarrassing myself. And the second I started talking, they all started zooming away from me. And I'm thinking in my head, oh God, is this already over? Is it ending? I don't know what's happening. And suddenly I hear a voice in my head. It's my own voice, but it's not me talking. It's the only I can claim it to be. And the voice tells me to look up, essentially. And I'm looking directly at this cloud, this massive storm cloud, and on each side of the storm cloud, way high up, and I can still see the bubbles flying around the bottom of the base, coming in and out from nowhere. And I see these two huge darkened eyes jutted out from the side of the storm cloud. And I ask the thing in kind of like a panic, like, what's happening? Why am I talking to you? Why are you here? Why are you hiding yourself? And it said to me in my mind through my own voice that I've tried to show you before and you panicked. And I thought, what? And instantly, the second I thought and I heard this, I was brought back to Paul Dever. I'm standing there with my friends again. I'm holding the flashlight, one flashlight coming from left to right, one flashlight coming from right to left. And we're both going to the noise on the door. And the second we hit the door, I see it. I see this freaking mutant beast thing. And I say to him, I was like, is that you? Like, I'm saying, is that you? Like, literally, I'm shocked. Like, it's happening. Like, it's real. And it's happening right then. Is that you? And the second I said that, the thing, it essentially ran, like just took off in my experience. And it's, when I said it, that was you, I instantly woke up and it was over. There was no more feeling of it. All the people around me were saying, you came out too quick. You're probably still if you open your eyes, you're still seeing stuff. And no, there was nothing. It was just this direct experience with this giant beast in a cloud. And I can't even express how real it was. Because you don't get to choose what you're seeing at all when this is happening. It's completely out of your control. I tried really hard when I first started happening to imagine something different because I was already told that I was going to see geometric lights and a light show and go into space. I was told all this stuff for weeks, a couple weeks ahead of time. And it was none of that happened. Instead, it was this weird time travel event that I can't even explain when I talked to this giant entity that seemed like I had a real conversation with someone. When I woke up, I was absolutely positive that it was real and it happened. And it was, and I'm looking at the doctor, the medicine man and the other people on staff. And I'm like, wait, was I just talking out loud? And they're like, no. And I was like, how long was I out for? They told me, you know, it was much shorter than normal, but it strung everything together that I had experienced in my life by making it seem this over apparent thing that I was, that triangle I saw, it might be connected to the experience in Dever, but the Dever experience I saw was this thing basically telling me that this isn't the first time I tried connecting with you and you've rejected me because how hideous I am, you know? And it is hideous. I'll just say that right now. I actually kind of get, it's so weird that I'm saying it and I'm thinking, God, I wonder if I'm going to like dreams of this stuff. Cause when this first happened, I was having all types of goofy dreams afterwards that made me really question if there was something really back there in Paul Dever. And to this day, I wish that it was still there and we could go back and check it out. Or maybe it was just a temporary visitor to the place. I don't know. All I know is that this, I am my biggest critic when it comes to this stuff. And in the same thought I'll have, it was real, it happened. There's no way that could happen. That's too outlandish, too wild. There's no way. But, you know, it happened. I can't keep saying that to myself all the time because I wasn't the only one that saw it. All these other witnesses that have the same effect happen to them. They talk about it for years. They've written little short stories about it to keep them to themselves. And it's just so strange and so wild that you can't reconcile it with reality. But at the same time, you have other witnesses who saw it. So it's the hardest way to deal with something. And that's my Paul Dever story, my ayahuasca story about Paul Dever.
You know, even if we see something that doesn't belong in our reality, it doesn't mean it wasn't there. It just means we just don't know what it is.
That's absolutely, absolutely real. And I just want to say another thing too, is that I for years, by the way, I avoided, not avoided, but it just stayed, being a professional in what I was doing, I didn't have time to dedicate to openly talking about it or kind of chasing anything down when I heard people say similar stories. And because there are not really that many similar stories, but it's real in the sense that it actually happened. Other people witnessed it. But do we have a full understanding of how our own minds work in the sense that maybe, just maybe, we were all experiencing the same delusion or something? I don't even know. Because, like I said, I have a hard time even openly talking about it now without trying to reconcile, like you said, just because, I mean, if you see something, it doesn't mean it's not in this reality or it's real or not real. It was so real that it was making a noise and all this stuff. And yet I can't accept it after all these years. And it makes me wonder if sometimes human creativity kind of takes control of the reins when you don't even know about it or something. I don't know. It's still so hard to even make it make sense.
You know, there are some strange stuff out there. So maybe someone else in the area of Taunton, Massachusetts, may have seen or know about something similar to what Jeff has seen. Get in contact.
I try to, it seems ridiculous. You know, when you look at, if you see, I've never seen anything other than that triangle that really made me think that there was something wild out there or the entity or anything like that. It's just so hard to ever take part in anything like that. But I'll tell you right now, I think that whatever we saw, we use the horse description because that's the nearest thing that we have that even looked even remotely to what this thing was. I mean, could there be an Olympic sprinter running around the rooftops of old decrepit buildings with a horse mask on? Maybe, but that it didn't even technically look like a horse. You know, it looked more like a mix. I don't even know. It was so crazy. It was the craziest thing we ever saw. And I've been to combat, for God's sakes.
Yeah, try and do a sketch or something. See if, you know.
I'll definitely do a sketch for you because I've been making the same sketch for years.
But that is an interesting one, experience for sure. And, you know, like you said, you know, you weren't the only one that experienced it.
Yeah, that's the most important thing to me because I can't tell you how many times I've talked to other people who are solo experiencers and I'm not taking anything away from them because for all I know, they are experiencing something. But talk about hard to verify. You're already going by firsthand account. Now you're going to go by a solo firsthand account, you know, and you don't know that person's background, their subjectivity, they're going to apply to whatever they're looking at. So I'm starting to fully believe that there are just some wild things out there that can't easily be explained. And maybe, just maybe, we saw just a nuts and bolts alien. We saw, I don't know, maybe we saw that's how simple it was. Whatever we were looking at was looking at us and we just, and that's what it appeared like. I don't know. I just know that it doesn't make much sense when you're talking about meat and bones humans. I would love to find other people that have seen anything like that. And I have my doubts, obviously, because how ridiculous it was. But the Black Triangle in Taunton, Massachusetts, I don't know. That had such an effect on me as a child that I would see, I'd have nightmares for months after of like a lightning bolt saucer looking thing crashing into my parents' car. And I would, you know, and I just think that if something like that could have affected me and my mother and I so bad when we're that much younger, someone must have saw it. Someone must have seen something that has stuck with them because that was so low in such a rural area. I just feel like someone had to see something. So hopefully maybe someone's listening out there that can possibly shed some light on one of those events.
I would definitely believe I'll get at least one email about it. I guarantee it.
I hope so, because I've been trying for years. And I remember we talked about it earlier, but I have followed when I have heard of their triangle stories and whatnot. But I have, I'm at a loss with how many people claim to see it. But they have very different things, and they make a lot of claims, and it's hard to make claims and you don't really know. I saw three lights on the side. I don't know if they have anything to do with propulsion. I just know that it looked like a crazy, very large triangle aircraft that people would not forget if they saw it. They would think I just got lucky and saw some really awesome high-tech stuff or even crazier, I saw some aliens flying down here.
You actually did a drawing, didn't you, with your mother when you were younger of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'll put that in the just below this episode so you can have a look. It's very good, actually. Did you draw all that?
That was a combination of both my mother and I. She actually has another one that's older. And my mother was an artist, so she has a really nice one that she can't find, which is driving me crazy because I know it's there somewhere. But she's what we call it a New England pack rat. So she just saves antiques, and that's probably among them.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
That is absolutely fascinating, Jeff.
I'm glad I could share.
Yeah, thank you for coming on and sharing that to our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure, and I've continued to be a listener. And I'm a big fan. I'm happy about your success. Keep it up.
I really appreciate it, man. A big thank you to Jeff for sharing his encounters tonight, and thank you for listening. Keep updated with the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you've had an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.